The month of April is Autism Awareness Month, a neurodevelopment disorder that affects approximately 4% of the Kenyan population. Globally, 1 in 100 children is diagnosed with the spectrum disorder, and consequently, parents find themselves in the difficult position of trying to provide the best care and management to their children. So, in honor of this month, I am dedicating all the stories shared to parents and caregivers of autistic children. I hope that the stories I share this month not only give you hope, but ensure that you do not feel alone if you are walking this journey with your children. We kick things off with Edna's story. When her daughter was 8, she found out that she was pregnant again. So she and her husband buckled down to raise another baby. When their second daughter was about a year old, they took notice of a couple of things that just seemed a bit odd. Here's a bit of what's coming up.
Autism also can find itself in your lineage. If someone is autistic, it can find yourself there. But we being Africans, autism is not something that we are used to. So I wouldn't know if anyone in my family is autistic. And unfortunately, autism has been labeled. We don't label it autism, we label it witchcraft. That's witchcraft. Yeah. You did something wrong. Your grandfather and grandmother did something wrong. You as a parent did something wrong. You went to witch doctors. You gave out your child. Name it.
We will delve into this story in a little bit. But before we do, this is Mama Tales, a podcast on our collective motherhood journey. I'm your host, Sally Kuria. If this is your first time listening, karibu sana. New episodes like this drop every single Tuesday. Well, other than the last 2 weeks where I was forced to take a break. You can find these episodes in major podcasting platforms, so make sure you subscribe, and on YouTube as well. Join the over 800 people who are subscribed to our bi-monthly newsletter. This is a space I use to share ideas beyond this podcast, and it is open to contributors and people who would want to share a message with the community. So if you have an idea or a thought on parenting that you'd like to share with us, do let me know by replying to any issue. You can find a link to the newsletter and how to subscribe in the show notes of this episode. Lastly, make sure you follow this podcast on our socials. That's at Mama Tales Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. I have been using these platforms to share some thoughts that seem to be very relatable to a lot of you. And if you want real-time parenting plus a whole lot of cooking and day-to-day stuff, check out my personal page on Instagram as well. That's at Sally Mugure. All of this will be in the show notes.
So, first of all, thank you for having me. So, my name is
Edna. This is Edna. She is a food content creator and a researcher and a mom of two amazing little girls, 11 and 3, with their 3-year-old daughter being on the autistic spectrum.
My journey began when I was 24 years old. That's when I got my first child. I was blessed enough to have, my pregnancy was smooth, my delivery was smooth, and my journey now into motherhood. I think the fact that I had worked in a children's home prior, even while I was pregnant, that sort of prepared me for motherhood, because we were taking care of children who are like a day old, those that had been picked from, you know, hospitals, places they had been dumped to teenagers. And then being a firstborn, in Africa, firstborns kind of raise the other children by default. You become assistant parents, whether you like it or not. Yep. So I had a smooth sailing, and I had people around me who are always there to help me with the child. So it wasn't a burden. The only thing I remember that I didn't like about motherhood was breastfeeding. I would go online, YouTube, and I say, oh, I've pumped, did you how many millimeters in a day? My breastfeeding journey. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? Why am I the only one who is screaming help when it comes to breastfeeding? My breastfeeding journey was, it wasn't good. And even with that, I think that traumatized me such that with my second child, I didn't really breastfeed. It was pumping all the way. I was like, nope, I'm not about to do this again. So I pumped. Though later on, she started breastfeeding when we were about, 1.5 years old. That's when she began breastfeeding. Yes. So breastfeeding, 1.5, she was just like, I don't know, it wasn't really breastfeeding, she was just comfort. And that's when actually now the autism started now kicking in, the signs and symptoms of autism started kicking in, because they do what we call a lot of steaming, which we'll get to. And one way of her steaming was through breastfeeding. She will really find comfort in that. So with my second child, I know it sounds weird, but I don't know how it happened. Mm-hmm. It wasn't planned. I didn't plan for it. I wasn't looking for a child. I was content with one. But here I am pregnant. And I found out I was pregnant like 2 months in. I didn't know. I just felt my stomach was just hard. For no apparent reason. And I had this metallic taste in my mouth that just couldn't go away. So by the time I was finding out I was pregnant, I was like around 2 months.
She had a totally normal pregnancy and hoped that she would have a vaginal birth like she did with her firstborn. During delivery, everything went well, but she thought the baby took a little longer than usual to let out her first cry.
I felt like my child took long to cry. But the doctors were not concerned. They didn't see it as an issue. You know the way, let me give an example, the way you can send someone maybe to a shop and then you have an estimated time of when that person should come back. And then you're like, this person has taken long, and then they show up. So you will not find it like an issue. Yeah. So that's what happened to me. So I was like, when the baby was out, I was like, hey, this child is not crying. And then now they begin crying. Mm. But the doctors didn't find a cause of alarm, like this child has taken long or anything. So I also didn't bother. I just asked, is my child okay? They're like, yeah, you know, Amelia, so your child is fine. So no cause of alarm. So fast forward, we are released, of course, we go home, the baby is okay, but the baby could not breastfeed. For some strange reasons. So I try now giving, the doctors recommended that if they cannot breastfeed and they check, I don't know, under the tongue, just to check if they are tongue tied and all that, my baby was fine. So we didn't know what was causing the child not to breastfeed. But the doctors recommended, how about you pump? And I was like, pumping is even better, because remember, I didn't have a good experience with breastfeeding with my first child. So I was like, even the second child, pumping, the way to go. So I pump, and whenever I pumped, the child could somehow breastfeed. Yeah, could bottle feed.
These struggles with breastfeeding were not new to Edna, but this time round, it was all made worse by the fact that she hadn't grieved the death of her mother. Her mother died 2 weeks before she had delivered her second born. Having been told that those feelings would not do her baby any good, she held it all in until her baby was born, and she believes that this intense emotional state made an already difficult situation that much harder.
And it was so heavy, I was depressed. I would cry day in, day out. So because of that, my milk production wasn't as high. I opted to start NAN, using the NAN feeding. What are they called?
Formula,
thank you. I opted to use the formula, but my daughter could not take any formula. We tried all sorts of formula. Again, a sign of autism, but it must be checked by a doctor, right? So, but those were like early signs, because autistic children tend to be hyper allergic to everything. My daughter can't stomach milk. Till date, any sort of milk, whether we tried goat milk, goat formula, we tried, I don't know, bile and what, cow and what, naan, name it. We even tried shipping in one from South Africa. That's how far we went. But she could not stomach it. We tried camel milk. She could not stomach it. Goat milk. She could not stomach it. We tried soya milk. That's the only thing she could take. Soya milk and almond milk, those ones. But now I just had to find a way of now just pumping and breastfeeding.
As their daughter grew older, they started noticing odd things. Initially, they didn't think they were alarming signs and just chalked it off to their daughter's unique personality.
She would stare into space and not stare at a person. She would prefer looking at spaces than looking at people's faces. which is awkward because children should prefer looking at faces. They need to seek people's faces because children don't like being alone. She'll just give you an awkward stare, but you can tell it's not you she's looking at. She's looking past you. Anytime we would feed, there was no that eye contact. She just didn't like human interaction. She was cooing. It's called cooing. Well, yeah, cooing, the baby sound that she would do. But human interaction was not there. Even with children, you know, the way children will be drawn to other children and get excited, nothing. Then when it came to crawling, she crawled with one leg up, the other leg on a normal four, which was awkward. But then again, we felt like, Labda, it's a style. I mean, whoever told you that crawling is must happen on fours? And then when she started walking, when she started like lifting herself on things and walking, she would tiptoe. Anytime she was on her feet, she would tiptoe. And we would wonder, why is this child tiptoeing?
So they noticed these odd things, but didn't worry too much about them because everything else seemed to be okay. She crawled at the right time. She started walking a little bit later, but in the expected range. However, when she got to 1.5, alarm bells started ringing.
So what happened is by the time she was getting to around 1.5, she could not even say goodbye. You know, the way you leave a challenge like, hi, bye, bye, and they would copy that bye. She would not. And then that's when I noticed, you know, there must be something wrong. And the child just did not, in my words, did not love me. You know, the way a child sees the mother and just wants to wrap themselves around their mother, my child didn't want that. My child did not want to be carried by anyone. She just doesn't want to be carried. And of course, people would look at it like, hey, you don't take your child out to meet people. That's why, you know, they are rejecting being carried. But later on, I learned that touch gave her some sort of shock. It's like you're electrifying her whenever you touched her. There's just some wave of currency that she felt. That's why she didn't want to be touched. So whenever we took our child for immunization, I'll bring these issues up. Like, I would tell the doctor, my child is just not interested with me or in me or the things I do. She would walk past me. She just doesn't want that human interaction completely. And the doctor would say, okay, it's a bit too early to diagnose for anything. Let's give her time because she could be a late bloomer and we'll be okay. You know, the doctor has said. So, and again, it's a repeatable institution. So you're like, okay, kama ni amesema, we are cool with it, let's flow with it. So we are getting to 2 years, the child hasn't talked any word. The child is still not saying the simple things like bye. She's not pointing, you know, the simple things, pointing, showing interest in people. She would only show interest in colors. So she would come to you if you have something bright on, and it has to be a monochrome, like if it's yellow, it's yellow. It's not mixed. If it's red, it's red. Not mixed. She will be interested in you. So you'll think, oh, this baby wants me to carry her. But no, they're interested in the color of your shirt, not you as a person. And they will just, you'll carry them and they will not look at you in the eye. They will go straight to the shirt or the bangle or whatever it is that you're putting on, not to you. So later on, we started now persisting with the doctors that know there's something wrong with this child. So now the doctors advised us to take the child to, and it's called an ECD, the Early Childhood Development Center. It's one in Kenya. And Gertrude's Muthaiga. They have an Early Childhood Development Center. So basically what happens, you go there, you take your child for total assessment. So they look at the child, and then if there's anything, they'll diagnose the child. If there's nothing, they'll just say, okay, maybe your child is just a late bloomer. We are not able to trace anything. And they will give you a way forward, of course.
Before they went to Gertrude, they went to Kenyatta Hospital, Doctors Plaza, to get a consultation from a pediatric neurologist.
They asked a lot of questions. So how was your delivery? Which I was shocked because I thought, hey, the issue is the child, not me.
Yeah.
They asked, how was the delivery? How was your pregnancy? What kind of emotions did you go through while you're pregnant? Why are you stressed? Did you have any issue during pregnancy? Any tiny issue that needed, you know, the doctor's concern and all that? And now as they were asking that and I'm answering is when, then they're just writing notes. Of course, they don't tell you anything. And then he was like, okay, I'm not the best doctor for your child. Take them to Muthaiga. And unfortunately now, autism is an issue with development that affects social, how you know, recognize things, basically how your brain processes things. It's not a disease.
Yeah.
So there's no emergency around it. It's not like your child has a fever, you'll be rushed into an emergency. So we go to Muthaiga and they tell us, oh, you've come to the ECD, you're karibuni sana, but you have to book. So we go around, I think it was like the month of May. We are booked in for around August. It's not an emergency. It's the only center. What do you expect?
Gosh.
There are 1,000,001 children waiting for their turn.
Yeah.
And you pay an arm and a leg. And I'm thinking, for me, I can afford. Or not yet afford, but we had done some research. And because we were given that threshold of, we waited for around 3 months. And this during these 3 months, there's literally nothing they can do. They tell you just take your child home and wait for those 3 months and you'll come. Literally nothing. So here I am, a mother. I'm busy panicking because this doctor does not see the urgency I have. This doctor does not see the need in me, the cry that I'm having towards my daughter. Me, I'm thinking this child is 2 and they're not showing any sign. You need to treat them now so that they start showing signs tomorrow. And they just, you know, like, si kupuza, but to me it was like kupuza because to me it was an emergency. But they're like, but your child is not sick. We have a line and the next appointment is for 3 months to come.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing you can do during that time apart from research. And even if you research, what are you researching about?
Yeah,
exactly. Because there's no diagnosis.
You don't know.
Yeah, and Google can be a shocker. You say my child cannot walk. Oh, it brings a whole list of things why your child cannot walk and you cannot pinpoint, oh, it must be this. So we are patient, we wait. And we were booked in and we went in. So for consultation at that time, I paid, it was 4,500. That's just consultation. The way you just enter and you talk to a doctor and you say, oh, my head, my arm, my eye, my what? And then they're like, okay, let's do this test, this bado jalipia test. That's just consultation.
Okay.
And the consultation is almost like, if you don't know, you will be very shocked because what they do, they just put the child there to play and observe. Me, I was thinking of, I don't know, press her. Pinch her, something, you know, remove her clothes, do something, you know, put thermometers, I don't know. But what they just did is gave her toys and they were observing. And as they were observing, they're asking me questions. How does she play? And I realized what my daughter plays in specific ways. She will take spoons and line them up. She will take bottles and line them up in a straight line. Perfectly straight line. She will take items and just line them up and they have to be items of the same theme. So she will not take a spoon and a bottle top and a bottle. No. If it's spoons, spoons. And a fork will not be there. If it's forks, forks. If it's specific things. If we bought her toys, both dolls and cars. She refused dolls completely. No teddy bears, no dolls. It's only recently that she's been able to accept them slowly. But with the cars, she would only play with the wheels. With bikes, whenever she saw children riding their bikes, she would like want the bike. And if you gave her, she would lay the bike down and just spin the wheels. Spin the wheels. And she would spend hours and hours there. Just spinning wheels, spinning wheels, spinning wheels. And that would fascinate her. You look at her face and you see she's having the time of her life, just spinning and spinning and spinning. And whenever she would spin herself around, she would not get dizzy. She would do it for hours, just spinning, spinning, spinning. And you're like, okay. When you get a hold of her, she's not dizzy. She's okay. And then she was always on the go. She did not walk. She ran. And she ran tiptoeing. And she would run for on and on. Run to the sitting room, the kitchen, and back. Back. It was like a marathon. Throughout. Until you hold her. And then she would not sit down. A normal child should be able to sit. Yeah. Even if it's for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Sit. Even if they're just doing nothing, just sit on a chair. My child could never sit on a chair. Until a few months ago is when she could sit. After sessions and sessions of therapy is when she could sit down. So my child would never sit. So even eating was standing.
Wow.
So those are some of the things that we noted. Like, And when the doctors were asking, okay, so how do you feed her? And we're like, oh, we're still feeding her. She's not able to feed herself because she cannot connect this plate, spoon, and the mouth. But for finger foods, she would eat. But the spoon, not yet. And then when it comes to potty training, which is a huge thing when it comes to autism, she can't feel. So she doesn't know when she's urinating or pooping. She can't feel it. So she doesn't get the urge. She just poops. So even now she's 3 years old and she's still in diapers. You can't do without diapers because she cannot feel. Of course, there are times we let her just be without diapers, but she doesn't have that feeling. And then she's non-verbal. So funny thing is that she speaks, but speaks, I call it intellectually, but she does not communicate, which is funny because if you showed her color, she'll tell you what color that is. She'll say, when she comes into the room, a room like this, this might be a bit too much for her, but a room like this, she'll be able to identify things. She'll say pink, purple, blue. That's how she talks. So what her brain is doing is just absorbing information.
Yeah.
That's all her brain does. So we go somewhere, she will identify numbers she can read. She'll identify numbers. She'll identify letters. She can count 1 up to 10 and backwards. That's how her brain processes things. But she will not communicate. She will not come and say, "Mom, I want. Mom, I need. Mom, look. Mom." But she will come and say, "Oh, tree. Oh, yellow. Oh, red. 1, 2, 3. And if it's not complete, she will complete it. Like if number 1, 2, 3 were written somewhere, she'll say 1, 2, 3 and complete it to 10, even if she's not seeing up to 10. She can't do it halfway. When it came to food, she can only eat dry foods. So nothing wet.
No soup.
If it's ugali, ugali. Tupambane na ugali kwanza. If it's rice, rice. So even when I put soup, it can't be watery because she will not take it. But through therapy, we've been able to achieve a few milestones, which I'll talk about. So when it came to playing, she will just play on her own. Even if you put her in the middle of 100 children, she will somehow find her own spot. Nothing about children fascinates her. Not unless they are putting on maybe a bright shirt or a top with something she can identify, a letter that she can read and all that. She'll come and not come to the child to play and all that, but just touch whatever it is and then just move on. Nothing about a child fascinates her. She doesn't play with other children. She just literally isolates herself, not playing alone while with children, but literally you'll see her in a different corner. If children ran towards her, she'll go the other direction. She doesn't talk. Like I mentioned, she's nonverbal. She doesn't talk. She will find other ways of expressing herself. If she wanted something, she will take you to it. If she needed maybe water and you're in the sitting room, she'll drag you to the kitchen and make you, you know, stand where the water is. So it's up to you now to keep guessing. Oh, you want water? You want something? Are you hungry? Things like that. So we've learned to put things at her level so she's just able to find her way through and be able to, you know, get whatever it is that she needs. Those are the questions that were being asked. How does she play? How does she relate with you? How does she relate with other relatives? What happened to you while you were giving birth? Because all those things come to play. Though, unfortunately, they cannot pinpoint that, it is because of this reason that your daughter is autistic. Yeah. They can't pinpoint that. But because you've brought up all these issues, they will say, okay, these are all possible reasons. That will help them know what kind of therapy to give. That is just more of a direction to them. Because autism also can find itself in your lineage. If someone is autistic, it can find yourself there. But we being Africans, autism is not something that we are used to. So I wouldn't know if anyone in my family is autistic. Now, from my daughter going forward and her generations to come, they will know because we have identified it. But me and my husband can't tell. How are we even supposed to tell? If someone didn't talk until they were 5 years, how does that concern us? Those are not things we go about talking. But grandmothers, maybe they would see something in a child and they'll be able to tell you, okay, I've seen this trait. It's happening. And unfortunately, autism has been labeled. We don't label it autism, we label it witchcraft. That's witchcraft. Yeah. You did something wrong. Your grandfather and grandmother did something wrong. You as a parent did something wrong. You went to witch doctors. You gave out your child. Name it. Other than looking for maybe something medically. Okay, there's something clearly wrong with this child. What can we do? And what is this? So we didn't know that. And then now the other things that your child goes through. They look at the ear. Because if this child is not talking, could it be? They're not hearing. So they look at they check the ears, they check, that will be done through, they do like speech therapy depending on the level your child is in. All that they check. They run, it's a blood count, but it's not this kawaida blood count to check at G or red blood cells and white blood cells. They check what other thing could be. I think they check the DNA because the results of that blood comes out like after a week or so. So there are other things they check. Yeah. And you pay. One, like maybe the hearing we paid like 3,500. The blood you'll pay like 7,000, you know. And in total, you spend almost 30,000. That is just diagnosis. Atujanza matibabu. Atujanza therapy. So after that is when we were told, okay, so your daughter is autistic.
We will put a pause here, and in the next episode, we will get into how Edna and her family adjusted their lives around their daughter's condition. She talks about the struggles of finding a school, navigating a full-time job with her daughter's care, the cost implication of this diagnosis, and the community she has built to support them. Here's a bit of what's coming up next week.
So they told us she needs to go to school. So well, in my head, I'm like, shule too. See, I just choose the one I want.
Yeah.
Which one? Picky, picky, ponky. This one will come to you. And then we go. So we do that. The first school. Yeah, we are here. We're bringing our child. What? School fees ningapi. And they're like, even before that school fees, bring that child first. Let's have a look. And they look at the child and they're like, no, we're not taking her. And you go to the next school.
She's what? Autistic. Okay, how old? She's yet to turn 3. Oh, so like 2.5. Mlete.
And we take the child. They observe the child and we're like, no, we're not taking her. I have never felt rejected in my life. Let me tell you, I mourned a child who was alive.
Thanks for listening. Remember to share this with a friend or two. If you're listening to this episode on Spotify Mobile, let me know what you think about it and anything else you'd love to hear on this podcast. If you have a story to share, it's super, super easy. Fill in the storyteller submission form in the show notes of this episode for consideration. Remember, your story is powerful. Catch you in the next one. Bye.